This is The Strategist, episode 1295. My name is Zane Velger. With me, as always, Corey Hogan. And we've got Stephen Carter. Carter, there are so many things we need to talk about, none of which involve politics. Now, let me address the first one. This is the elephant in the room, which is we're recording Monday evening.
Yeah.
Folks might be saying, well, hold on. Aren't you supposed to record Sunday evening? Well, Corey, we've got a clause.
Nobody thinks.
Oh, no, no. But this particular
they're
time.
They're so consistent.
This particular time, this it was time contractual. This time was contractual. Yeah.
It
because
was contractual.
We have a rule, we have a contract, Carter, that every time our sponsor's website is down, we can't record.
Yeah.
And Flair Airlines, they had their website down yesterday, causing travel mayhem for tens of people.
Tens of people.
But of course, contractually, we could not turn these mics on. You couldn't hear this beautiful dulcet tone that you're hearing right now, folks.
It's,
and I'm
it's
sorry.
More than contractual. It's also technical. I mean, we share a back end with Flair.
It's moral. Sorry. It's
yeah, it's immoral.
Yeah.
But yeah, we record. We record on the same intercom system that's used in flight. When they're not using it, that's how we actually record the podcast.
People would be surprised, but we do ship our mics out every Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday, whenever we record, and Thursday, back to Flair Airlines. It's one of the reasons that they're never able to get back to folks, Carter.
Yeah, well, you know, listening to our podcast is what keeps them flying. No?
Cool.
What?
Corey, okay. Did part of you die when Carter Swift misses on a joke?
It wasn't really even a joke. It was just a thing I was saying.
Number two. We'll never get to the show if we don't keep going, Carter.
Okay.
Item number two. Doug Wong.
I'm glad you brought that up.
That was on a Patreon, so I'm glad we're bringing it into the main field.
Let's talk about Doug Wong. Okay, let's talk about Doug Wong. Yeah. Carter, talk about the history of Doug Wong, where things stand with Doug Wong.
Actually, I have a cease and desist letter from the Department of Finance of the Government of Canada. We are no longer allowed to talk about Doug Wong. So I'm going to ask you not to bring it up on this particular episode. Corey, can we go back and edit this section out?
I mean, can and will. Different things.
Just because the cease and desist made it sound like I personally was going to be responsible. Because
to be clear, not the podcast.
No.
That's about right.
Yeah.
Doesn't concern me.
I didn't think that we said anything that bad about Doug Wong, and I implore our listeners to go back and listen to our latest Patreon to determine whether or not we said anything particularly horrible.
Here's a lesson for anyone. If you make plans with Carter, don't ghost on him. Okay? Or else you get the Doug Wong treatment.
It turns out that he didn't actually ghost me. Okay.
Oh, shit. Wait,
yeah,
what?
This is why we got the cease and desist letter.
Wait. What's the real story?
No, okay, I can't about it right now. And I think it's really imperative now. Now it's really imperative that Corey find the internal fortitude to go back and delete this section. Okay.
Carter, did you end up at the wrong Chili's?
The cease and desist letter is very clear. Okay. It is very clear. It is... Do not talk about Doug Wong anymore on the podcast. So let's do a strong break.
Oh.
Hang here. Hey!
Corey, we know what happened here. We know what happened here, Corey.
How about that AFL?
Carter ended up at the wrong Beaver Tails.
There's multiple locations now. It's not just the one in
the market. Yeah, Carter.
In the market anymore, yeah.
Carter. Rookie Ottawa move.
Oh, yeah.
Rookie Ottawa move. No one who works at the Department of Finance wants to meet you at the Byward Market, Beaver Tails. They're definitely talking about the other one.
It was definitely some serious mistakes were made, so.
Corey, we're moving on to point number three. This one is close to our heart, because this is, sometimes we acknowledge our errors on this show. Rarely, but we acknowledge our errors on this show. We own thestrategist.ca.
We don't
own strategist.ca.
We used to.
Oh, and this is where the error comes in, Corey, because right now, if folks go to strategist.ca, you will see that beautiful domain name. Corey, you can buy it. And it's a pretty penny. But I feel like with all the domains we own, if we cash in on all of them right now, we can purchase this domain. Are you ready to do it?
So you're thinking domain auction.
Domain
auction. See how much money we get for disgraced former mayor Patrick Brown.com, for example.
Yeah. I think what we do, okay, I'm just putting this out on the show right now. We list all of our domains, every single one we have on auction right now. And we know that the major purchasing class for these domains are going to be our listeners. So if they like anything that we have right now, we price them out. $500 a pop. You know why? Because it's for a good cause. It's to create enough cash for us to buy strategist.ca, which sits at just under $7,000 right now.
Now, I assume you're also including thestrategist.ca on that list to see if we can get $500 for that as well, right?
Yeah, it's got to be 500, yeah.
we might as well do it, Carter. I think we have to do it.
I think we have.
How did we lose that one? How did we do that?
Well, I blame
you. Remember, there was a guy who left the podcast to go work?
Yeah, that's true.
No,
It was Zane, right?
It was definitely not me. It was definitely not me. Carter, it was you. What are you typing out, Carter? You're clearly writing emails during the show. Is that what's going on?
This is a level of multitasking I can't get behind, Stephen.
No, I'm actually preparing. There's a lot that I have to get ready for the show, and I didn't get ready. So,
okay, well, this topic's going to come out of left field. Let's move it on to our first segment. Our first segment, Jenny from the same block, guys. I want to talk about Jenny Byrne. We have talked about Jenny Byrne on this show, for those that
this
are uninitiated.
This has been a lot, yeah.
Well, there is a new development that I think it's worthy of bringing up and worthy of discussing. So last week, the Liberals came out with another attack on Jenny Byrne. This is the conservative advisor. She's a caucus advisor to Pierre Poilievre. She's a longtime conservative strategist. She ran the Harper campaign in 2015. Well, on Thursday, the Globe and Mail last Thursday reported that a federal lobbying firm is located at the same office as Jenny Byrne and Associates. This firm was set up on the same day that Pierre Poilievre won his leadership. It's called Forecheck Strategies. They use the same back end as Jenny Byrne and Associates. And of course, this firm does not include Jenny Byrne, Carter. Yep. Liberals are saying this is a smoking gun, that the same person who's influencing Pierre Poilievre is now having a GR firm influencing clients, giving them access. It's using big words like lobbying and back end and, you know, strategist, all those words that buzz the media. My question to you guys here is this a thing? And I ask it in two ways. Is this a thing from a real perspective?
Sure.
And then is this a thing from a potent political attack? Let's start with the second part first. Corey, can I start with you on this? Please go ahead. Oh, that was,
man, that's
that was feeble.
Weak.
Yeah, that was
extremely
weak. We're going
to have to get
weak.
Some noise that you put in post.
Yeah, are you opening cans from your like 1970s Olympic can edition? What is this, Berlin Olympics edition that you're drinking Coca-Cola from? Corey. Here's the thing. Is this a thing from a political attack? Are the Liberals on to something? Same question to you in a second, Carter.
Maybe. I do think that there's something to it in the sense that it's kind of like shady things bingo, right? And if you dab enough of those squares, you start to think something really nefarious is happening here. And you have things like new company, same day, right? That's number one, right? Mm-hmm. Shared back end. You know, Byrne not on this list, on the other list there. It starts to feel like something is up. It really does, but we'll get there. I'll just throw on the table. Like, a lot of these things are fairly common within the consulting industry more generally.
Oh, yeah.
We can talk about whether they're right or appropriate or not, but, you know, having a lot of business cards in your pocket and having some of your colleagues conflicted out of some of those businesses and you not being in others, also pretty common in consulting. But because it has all of these elements and it creates all of this smoke, yeah, I think it could be, because people will start to assume that there is fire there. And, you know, I don't immediately see fire myself, but certainly it fills that bingo card. And so people are going to make some assumptions about what's going on.
Carter, is there a there from a political attack perspective?
No, Corey's wrong. There is no there. It is just... you know, trying to dig up dirt on Jenny Byrne. I mean, if you really want to dig up dirt on someone, try Pierre Poilievre. He's the leader of the party. Jenny Byrne is an advisor who's barely on the payroll. I mean, it has no impact on the overall scheme of things. And I think the Canadians will see right through it. There's lots of reasons not to like Pierre Poilievre. Jenny Byrne's behavior is not one of them.
Corey, what do you think of that? Carter's with a definitive no. He's saying this is not a thing. The Liberals seem to have... This is the second time they've gone into this well, right? First time was Jenny Byrne and Loblaws. This is where we had a large, long episode where we kind of talked about, you know, since when did strategists and advisors become part of the political attack circle, so to speak, can become targets. But Carter's saying no, there's not a there.
Well, he makes a good point in the sense that she is not on any ballot, right? And I just don't know how much people are going to hold her actions against Pierre Poilievre. But there are instances where people hold the actions of the advisors against the leader. Because as we talked about in that episode, the leader gets to pick their team. And so in a way, the leader should be more accountable for the actions of that team of advisors than they are of the MPs or the MLAs that they just end up stuck with a lot of the time. And so I'm not sure you can say it's 100% all free and clear for Pierre Poilievre. The other thing is it does sort of suggest, again, the facts need to all come out. The facts on their surface are not as scary to me as perhaps they're being made out to be by the Liberal Party. But there is a certain hypocrisy charge that can be made as well, right? Pierre Poilievre said, no lobbyists. I'm gonna get them out of here. And then immediately, like, another lobbying firm is set up by his, you know, most senior of advisors, or the people around his most senior of advisor would be the more accurate way to put it. And so, yeah, maybe, probably, Pierre Poilievre skates. Could it be a pain in the ass for a bit for him? Could it come up at inopportune times? Could it be used as a reinforcing piece if there are other ethics challenges? Maybe.
Carter, here's where the Liberals have taken it as a step two, and I'm curious to hear your analysis of this strategy. They have talked about, they've once again reintroduced the line that we talked about a few episodes ago that was introduced by Fraser, Pierre Poilievre doesn't care about you, right? And they now say he's working for big corporations.
Were they up all night on that one?
Yeah, just it's trying really to figure good it stuff. Out? Wow.
He's really working good for big corporations and rich friends. And what they try to do is they try to take the Jenny Byrne attack. They put it in together in this 40-second video that they've produced, which seems like it could have a 30-second ad cut. I don't know if that's true, but I'm kind of mentioning this. They talk about Jenny Byrne. Then they talk about Melissa Lansman, who used to be a lobbyist herself, worked for Walmart and other companies. And then they play Pierre Poilievre's clip where he says, and I'm paraphrasing here, corporate lobbyists are useless, right? They mean nothing. So they're trying to use his own words against him. They're trying to draw Jenny Byrne into this. Is that an effective political attack? And if no, I want to talk about what could make it better if this is a lane they're committed to, Carter.
No, I mean, it's absolutely not an effective political attack. It is a it's something that you're trying to, maybe partisan hacks will get excited about. But even then, I think that most partisan hacks know more lobbyists than they know actual politicians. This is just—it's just lame on many levels. I mean, does this rise to the scandal level of foreign interference or the We Charity scandal or any of the different things that have actually hit and stuck to Justin Trudeau? This doesn't seem to fit any of those categories. And I'm not sitting—you know—I'm no Pierre Poilievre enthusiast, but I just can't see how this actually has any impact at all.
Corey, what do you think here? Like, they're trying to, you know, they didn't stick on the Jenny Byrne thing, but they said as soon as it, they almost seem to have a part two ready, right? Where it's like the Jenny Byrne thing comes out, they try to push it, it has a day of its thing, and then their part two was, oh, we're going to use Pierre's words against him about his principal advisor. Two inside baseball? Well, give me analysis, and then let's make it better for them in terms of what would be more effective and potent.
Well, it's okay. So as we're talking about this, I get actually less enthusiastic for the Liberals doing this because it goes back to one of the things that I've said about them for a long time. I don't really know what their plan is for the next election, but can I ask you, too cozy with big business and has ethical failings? I just say those words, which political party comes to mind?
Immediately think of Justin Trudeau.
I mean, this is the challenge, right? This is one of these charges that seems like it's more easily leveled against you than your opponent. So are you just trying to bring them down to, quote unquote, your level in the eyes of Canadians? Do we really think Canadians think Pierre Poilievre is too establishment? Like, he's too connected? Like, that's not the fear Canadians have of Pierre Poilievre. They have a fear that he associates with wingnuts. It might be one himself. And that he might be an asshole. But they don't think that he's just too Bay Street. Like, nobody thinks Pierre Poilievre is too Bay Street, do they? And is that the kind of thing that they want to create of Pierre Poilievre? Like, this is the brand that they're going to now try to stick him with?
Yeah.
Because that doesn't seem actually rooted in anything real. And one of the things that we always say here is that you know, you want to take reality and bend it just a little, right? You want to bend it just a little, whether you're trying to make a positive story about your candidate, you know, you take their good elements and you just forget about all of the bad ones and you just put the good in. Or when you're talking about your opponents, you take something real about them and you just, you hyperfixate on those and you torque it just a little. But this feels like, this is a thing liberals tell themselves about conservatives. I'm not sure anybody's believed it about the conservatives since the modern conservative party was created.
Carter, if I am tasking you with taking the raw pieces of what they have here and making the best attack of it, give me a direction that isn't this one that you're going in.
I mean, I think that the attack on Pierre Poilievre should be about around his likability. He's just not a likable person, right? And that attack, like, I'm not sure why you're bringing Jenny Byrne into this, right? Like, to me, it's not like Jenny Byrne works in the office. It's not like Jenny Byrne is Gerald Butts 2.0. You know, how are you going after the Jenny Byrne thing? Why wouldn't you just go after Pierre Poilievre, who's just unlikable? And I mean, I guess you could say, you know, unlikable Jenny Byrne is advising unlikable Pierre Poilievre, but I'm really struggling with this thing because I just don't see, like, I think that they see something that they think is an ethical problem. And most Canadians will say, I don't understand, you know, yeah. And they won't pay attention long enough to get it explained to them.
Corey, if you had to use the raw ingredients in front of you that I'm presenting, Jenny Byrne, like, I'm not asking you to kind of, like, you know, you are tasked with creating a product out of what you have. What would the guiding posts or the light for you look like in terms of crafting that product?
Well, first of all, not every hit is a hit worth fixating on. And I'm not saying that they're at this point fixating. Like, this is a pretty limited hit at this point. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you just want to put things up and you want to see what gets traction.
Yep.
Well, you can be really surprised. Occasionally something will come up which you think is no big deal because you understand some of the mechanics of it and you realize, oh wait, this is actually a huge fucking deal. And not to detour too much, but I immediately think in Alberta of the No Meat Committee, mm-hmm. right? Branded such. But essentially every MLA was put on three committees and they got committee pay for that. I think it was three, right, Stephen? But
yeah.
And so everybody got an equal amount of pay and some of those committees were more useful than other committees. But at the end of the day, all the MLAs were basically making the same, right? There were chairs making a little bit more, but everybody was making the same. However, then it became a big problem because the committee that literally hadn't met, those MLAs were still getting paid to be on it. Now, were they? I mean, technically, yes, that's what the pay was for. But practically, no. Practically, it was just MLAs got paid this much and they were expected to serve on X number of committees. But if they weren't on a committee, I'm sure they were doing other things. So I could tell you when that first came up, I mean, obviously there were some elements where I thought, oh, that's interesting and probably bad for people. But I'll tell you, I also, at the time I was working for the Liberal Party, the Alberta Liberal Party, we had MLAs on that committee. Yep. So I wasn't that keen to make it a big deal. But it became a huge fucking thing to the public. And everybody was bouncing around and springing around on that particular issue. So we are all creatures of our environments. And sometimes we can't see the things that become fatal. So it is important for parties to sort of test things and run it up the flagpole and see what's going on there. But I just don't know if this one is worth it because I don't know if it reinforces the story of Pierre Poilievre you want to tell. And in fact, I kind of worry in a funny way. Like, hear me out here. Maybe this is too crazy. Maybe this is a step beyond sane.
Okay.
But I actually don't know that Pierre Poilievre being a little bit secretly more establishment than he lets on is something that makes me personally feel worse about him.
Yeah.
Say that one more time, just so I can understand that. There's a lot of double negatives there.
So say Pierre Poilievre, so you're saying that Pierre Poilievre is actually connected to these things. He is going to listen to lobbyists.
Rich friends, like, corporate elites, exactly. All that sort of stuff. Okay.
Yeah. You know, that establishment guy, too cozy with big business.
Okay. Okay.
I kind of think that might be a sensible, moderating influence on the guy. I actually worry about the version of Pierre Poilievre that is entirely, you know, this weather vane to the most populist and radical elements of the country. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, is it reinforcing of the core narrative you want to tell about Pierre Poilievre?
That he's a bit more Bay Street than he may, than is more like sort of,
yeah,
yeah,
like he's
reactionary,
he's actually
conservatism.
Not Yeah, he's not actually this reactionary who hands out donuts to people. He's secretly in bed with like the most stable large institutions of this country. Is that a good attack?
Yeah, it just doesn't feel like it's going the right way.
If you guys were tasked with a different task, Carter, and I think I know your answer because you've thrown likability on the table. What's the lane you'd pick for the liberals? You'd kind of come into the room and you'd say, fuck this ad, here's why it's wrong. Right. I'm going after likability. Am I putting words in your mouth by saying that? Or are you going to sharpen that for me? What's the lane that you're choosing as the new North Star against Pierre and saying anything that doesn't fit into the lane of X, we are not doing? Well, how would you define that? And Corey, I'm coming to you for that same question.
I mean, I really would dive in under the likability thing, Zane. I mean, I'd like to come up with something different, but it's just right there. People don't like this guy. Now, they don't like your guy more, but you can still move. You know, Justin Trudeau could probably gain some points in likability, and Pierre Poilievre can lose a number of points on likability. And people vote for the strangest of reasons, and not liking someone turns out to be a very big reason why people don't vote for them. So that's why I picked the likability line. And if it doesn't fit into, does this make him less likable? I probably wouldn't go for it for right now. Because they did, does this make Justin Trudeau less trustworthy? For a long time, and it worked. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's worked fucking wonders. And it's all been one question. Do you trust him more or do you trust him less? And this, you know, I think that if you were to grab onto, do you like this guy? Do you like this guy at all? I think you might have a chance.
Corey, if I was tasking you the same thing, almost like Quiz Show. You seen Quiz Show, also known as Dave? You're the guy that isn't John Turturro's character here, right? You're going in the booth, you're putting on the headphones. You didn't hear what Carter said. He chose likability, but you don't know that. What are you choosing?
I won't say likability because he said it. How about something around extremism? How about the populism that's going to pull him away? Certainly, the Liberals have attempted versions of that for the last bit. They've discussed the radicalism of Pierre Poilievre being, imported from the United States. I don't know that the particular way they've tried to lay this on him is. It feels like histrionics, but I do think that there's something there where you say, yeah, this is so outside of the mainstream, yeah. There's just this huge desire to make things rhyme apparently today. You know, Pierre doesn't care. Half the reason I think that they've gone with these attacks is because they think, okay, that's great, it rhymes. But I have a problem with anything that also sounds like almost it could be like an action hero slogan, like Pierre doesn't care. Like he gives no fucks and he's going to fix this country
Which kind of is brand if you're
is my point. Like, yeah. What are you trying to say? What are you trying to do? And why do you think this hurts him? But, I think there's something more to be like, he's so far outside of the mainstream that it's just like, he's not what we're looking for. He's the solution that is the problem. And what you do with that, with the Liberals, I don't know. But I don't think it's tying him to Bay Street.
Carter's going with Pierre as a prick. And Corey's going with Pierre as extreme. Not too bad.
Let me add to that. Because the way that they're trying to do it is to say, well, he's just like Donald Trump. He's not like Donald Trump. Donald Trump is likable. To a certain subset of people, Donald Trump is a likable character. This guy's not a likable character. And comparing him to Donald Trump has proven to be foolhardy in many different ways. I would just dig in and say, this guy is he's an extremist, is part, I think, could be easily part of my, is he likable? How many extremists do I like? None. I like people who are like me.
Pierre Poilievre is the guy you don't want to be stuck in an elevator with.
Oh, yeah.
Imagine the 30-second spot.
Oh, my God. Could you imagine that, actually? Just take clips, like really short clips of him talking, and then you just...
The most annoying shit.
Yeah.
You have a guy in the elevator saying this to just a normal person. You have almost on the screen popping over it, like the quote that Pierre Poilievre said these things.
Yeah.
No, even better. I'm you have the ad board in the elevator, Someone walks in, chooses the 13th floor. It's a 30-second ride, and you have the ad board in the elevator saying all of Pierre's shitty lines back to back to back. You get out, like the person's just like rushing to get out, and then the super
he's
is
like hitting Leo.
Yeah. Just big like him, big like just trying to get out, rushing to get out. As soon as their floor comes, they just dart out, and then you just have like a shaky camera, like with the elevator going back to ground, being Pierre Poilievre, the last guy you want to be stuck in an elevator with.
Find out more at extremeprick.ca.
Yeah.
Oh. Which, by the way, we own today, and we're selling it tomorrow for $500. Okay, we need the cash to buy strategist.ca. Guys, one final thing here: can we revisit our rules for creating from engineering and manufacturing scandal?
Sure.
We've talked about this years ago. Can we put together some notes? What does it take to engineer a scandal today? And I know and then the liberals are trying to do it, right? Everything yep. they're trying to. What are they? We've talked about what they got wrong. Carter, enshrine that in rules that they perhaps missed or rules that folks should consider. Let's go back and forth for a bit, and then I'll spare you the rest of the time on something else.
Well, rule number one for me is that it has to be something that is believable, right? So it has to be an attack that fits into an existing frame or something that we believe already about this character. So the character of Justin Trudeau, it is relatively easy to believe some of these non-trustworthy claims, right? It is easy to believe those things. I'm not saying they're true, but they're believable. And that's what I think the first rule needs to be. This is a believable attack upon the person.
Corey, what else do you want to add? Carter adds believable to the list in terms of our rules to engineer a political scandal. What else needs to be part of it?
Well, that's easily the best one on the list. I feel like I'm playing, Family Feud, and the top of the board is now taken. And I just have to sadly settle for second place here. But, you know, I guess another important component of this is that the scandal needs to not be something you also are guilty of.
Yeah.
Because I think that one of the challenges with the one that the liberals are trying to put forward right now is there's this thing called the news that many of us have read over the past 8 years, and it's pretty easy to find some comps. Even if you don't believe as the liberals they are perfect comps, there's enough where people can say, ethical failings, where have I heard that before? Oh, maybe it was one of the three times the ethics commissioner said that about Justin Trudeau. Right? Like, I just think you have to be very careful about saying something that is so obviously, a charge that could, in macro, be laid more easily at your feet.
Carter, you want to add a third rule to the board? Believable, not something you're also guilty of. What else you want to add to the board?
I just want to add understandable. I mean, it needs to be something that the average person understands intuitively. If it is not something that you understand intuitively, then, you know, now you're explaining. And what do we know about explaining? If you're explaining, you're losing. So
do you mean like just it has to be like the context doesn't have to be deep? It needs to be like the fact base or the knowledge base of the public already needs to be there. Is that what you're saying? I don't need to put words in your mouth.
Justin Trudeau's family took a gift from the Wee charity that they weren't entitled to. Boom. Right. Understandable. It's something that makes sense. The foreign interference benefited Justin Trudeau, so he's not investigating it. Boom. It makes sense. Now, is it true? Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. It's understandable. It's easy to understand. Therefore, it must be true. Like we did it with the Gondek campaign. Jeremy Farkas equals Jason Kenney. Was it true? No, probably not. But did it make sense? Did people understand it intuitively? Yeah, they did. So, you know, if it's believable and it's intuitive, then I think you're cooking with real fire.
That's really interesting. Yeah, you're if it's understandable, it must be true. It's such a cynical thing to say. But I know exactly where you're coming from.
Oh my God.
It's not cynical at all. It's based in actual science. Like,
well, you know what? You said it, and it sounds okay, so it must be true. So
there you go.
Corey, do you want to round us out with the fourth rule on the board? I feel like Carter's come up with two bangers. Not to say yours around not something you're also guilty of isn't good. Anything else you want to add before I throw it to our next segment?
I mean, there's an interesting thing about precedent. I don't know how to turn it into a rule, but you want something that's both not done so much that it's to death and nobody cares anymore because it just seems like it's happened 1,000 times. But you don't want it to be so novel that you affect that kind of that comprehension that Steven's talking about. You want people to hear it and go, oh, boom, it's this thing, which I know was wrong, right? And it's maybe a sub point to Steven's point, but that's part of why whenever there's a new scandal, somebody tries to affix gate to the end of it, right? Because you're being like, oh, like Watergate, right? Right. It's just like that. Or now how in Canada we had ad scam, right? And so, which itself was a parody of, you know, we talked about this in the 80s, app scam, right? And so, but that's become one of the ones that we use around here. You want people to be able to draw those easy, lazy parallels and immediately kind of shorthand it like, oh, that's wrong. I get it. Yeah. I get that that's wrong.
We're going to leave that segment there, move it to our next segment, meeting with the enemy. Corey, there's some really fascinating updates in this recall for Jyoti Gondek. We're going to go hyper-local. We went national, we're going to go hyper-local, but I think there's just really fascinating strategic conversations here. Carter, to catch people up to speed, you guys both need to help me. I'm just going to paraphrase. Sure. There was a recall for Jyoti Gondek, a campaign that requires a shit ton of signatures. That's a technical term. More signatures than people who voted in the election to recall Jyoti Gondek. It was started by a guy, a small business guy here in Calgary. Seems to have started it on his own. We then understood that there was lawn signs going up. There was recall campaigns in person in plus 15s. There was billboards. There was backing through other financial sources. People had made donations. People are attaching onto this. We've talked about how this is a data mining, data elevation exercise. Well, we chatted, was it last week or a few weeks ago? I don't even remember, Carter. What is time anymore? But we chatted about whether with these additional forces being added onto it, is there a sympathy strategy for Jyoti Gondek? Is there something that she could say to say, look at these outsized forces against me? And then something fascinating happened. This week, it was revealed that she met with the individual that took out this petition, that started this petition, I guess is the best way to put it. And I want to analyze that strategy. I want to analyze it for the particular purposes of this conversation, but I also think there's really something interesting around the human element of saying someone's trying to do something against you. When does the human element kind of come in? When does just sitting down and leveling out come in to equation? When is it good strategy at the end of the day? So on the specifics, and then on the broader principle of sitting down with the other side, when is it good strategy? Carter, let's talk about the specifics. What did you make of the move here? Corey, I'm going to come to you in a second.
I thought it was ridiculously stupid. I mean, first of all, you don't need more talking points on the recall Gondek piece. So giving the media another talking point that's going to give you 2, 3, 4, 5 more days of media coverage on this particular topic. So it's not even on your own side of the talking points. Now you're elevating Landon Johnson and his talking points to the point where it is now the dominant theme. On top of that, you're not getting any sympathy. You're still the high-powered mayor talking with a citizen. So you look like you're, you know, what was the outcome that you were expecting? Were you expecting to bully him out of the recall petition? Were you expecting him to say, I'm sorry, I was wrong? These things were never going to happen. And now you've elevated him, given him more time, given him more air oxygen, and Landon Johnson looks like he's on equal footing to the mayor of Calgary, which I think is lunacy. This was one of the worst political plays I think I've seen out of a politician, because it failed on the media level, it failed on the human level, it failed on the sympathy level, it failed on just about every level. And I know that there were lots of people on Twitter who were like, this is a great idea. Those people on Twitter are on Twitter because they can't even have their own podcasts. And, you know, we have our own podcast. So there.
Now, we have our own podcast. We're also fundraising for strategist.ca.
I don't even think we told anybody. Like, you didn't even tell anyone how expensive it was.
$6,800. We need to sell a shit ton of our domain inventory.
We got to sell a lot of domains.
Corey, do you have any of our inventory? Do you have anything to dangle in front of these motherfuckers out there? Okay, like, if you're sitting on the couch with your kids right now and you wanted to buy Carter's, what was it? Carter's Monthly Nut.ca? Well, that could be your...
That
could
be yours. Really expensive. Yeah, that one's good. That's a good one.
That one could be yours, okay? You could gift it to a friend or a family member. You know what? Leave it in your inheritance. Leave it for your kids.
Yeah, let them find that when they open up your will.
When you are 6 feet below and the lawyer at the top floor of some tower is opening the envelope and saying, you know what, to my youngest, you get Carter's Monthly Nut.ca. Okay.
And it's now a .com, Zane.
Oh my God. Oh my God. You need to buy that right now. And you know what?
I know you're surprised that cartersmonthlynut.com was not taken.
I was shocked.
Leave it to your youngest. Just reach out to us, okay? We will sell it to you. Just name your price. Okay? Name your price. It's $1,000. Corey, is Carter right here? Is Carter right that this was a fail on all fronts? Because I might be part of that group online that on a human level thought this was, I can't say strategic because I don't know, maybe don't endearing, maybe interesting. I'm actually being honest with you here. I thought it was interesting on a human level. But is Carter
right? Yeah, it's because you were raised on some West Wing bullshit and just the Aaron Sorkinist nonsense that this was spoke to you on a foundational level. You all of a sudden remembered being a child, sitting with your parents, watching on some 13-inch pitiful little television, you know, some uplifting speech by Martin Sheen, and you thought, this is who I am and this is what I am.
Why do I even show up to this fucking gig? Okay? If you're going to make fun of my childhood poverty, is this what you want to do, Corey?
No, you had a much bigger TV. Just like to watch it on the 13-inch.
What happened to the Northeast solidarity?
Listen, man, I'm from the Northeast. We all have enormous teeth.
You are not from the Northeast. You're opposing for being from the Northeast, okay? You, like, make your family cosplay in this small house that you have, okay?
Zane, please.
It's so sad. It is so sad.
You live in the Northwest. You don't understand.
You could afford so much more, yet you don't. It's just sad.
Okay.
It's just sad what you do to try to do to be part of Che.
All right, well, here's... Yeah. So, I mean, fundamentally, though, I do think, like, that's the thing. They were looking for this moment of big drama. They were looking for the rising violins, you know?
Why didn't it work? Play even available to them at all? I guess that's the question I have for you.
Listen, somebody should have sat there and decision treed this shit out. They should have talked about, what do we do if X happens? What's the probability of X? What do we do if Y happens? What's the probability of Y? You know, this is like a perfect Lisa Young flowchart moment. Lisa, if you're listening... make this flowchart. I would love to see this flowchart, because ultimately you're going to get only like some very narrow like option set that's going to get you to kind of this positive outcome. Like the one Stephen talked about where she meets with him and is like, and he says, oh, I guess I was mistaken, was not probable, but I think maybe what she was looking for was she goes and she gets to be able to say like, I'm a mayor who cares and talks to people. But like, I guess that's how you get a meeting with the mayor now? Like, do you even want to encourage that? And I couldn't agree more with Stephen in terms of it just propels the story. Like, all of a sudden, we continue to talk about this. We're talking about this right now. Why? Mm-hmm. Why? Why are we doing this? Because nobody needed this. Nobody was calling for this. I actually think that the whole, like, wave based on his interview was quieting down. And then it's just like, boom, we're right back in it. Oh, my God, now we're having all these meta conversations. Should the mayor even have met with this individual under this context in this way? Is it intimidating for the mayor to do that? There's such a power dynamic. And ultimately, yeah, Stephen's right. Like, you're the mayor, man. And I think that people want their mayors to be approachable and accessible. But this is something different. Right? This is the mayor calling and saying, hey, I hear you got a problem with me. That's not a fucking good look.
That's the perfect way to put it. Thank you, Corey.
When is sitting down with the other side in a rare situation like this, where the other side's not like a political opponent, right? Where we've talked at length about political opponents and like that, you know. Is this ever a good idea? I guess is what I'm trying to... was this a timing thing, or was this strategy always wrought in that regard? Go first, and then Carter, I'll come to you.
I think, generally speaking, people don't like moments that make them uncomfortable. And I can think of a time in the 2012 provincial election where I think Alison Redford was at an event, was like main streeting on 124th Street in Edmonton, and Raj Sherman was across the street, main streeting at a different street in Edmonton, and he went across the street to say hi to her. Or was it Danielle Smith? Does not matter. Point is, it was awkward. The media found it awkward. The whole thing just seemed like a bad energy to bring to these things. People don't want that. You know, we talk about people wanting these moments, but people actually just want the same thing they've always had most of the time, which is that politics plays out beat by beat and doesn't necessarily kind of alarm them or concern them in any way. Like, the comp always has to be, if you were, like, for a voter, like, imagine you're in a workplace and there's two people who don't get along. How do you want to engage with them? Basically, you want to engage with each of them. You don't want to be in a room when the two of them are engaging with each other.
Carter, anything to add here? Is this ever a good strategy? Was this just a byproduct of poor timing? Or would, even if the timing was different, this had happened at the beginning, you would have kind of said, no, not a good strategy.
This is a terrible strategy from basically the word go, because there's a status and power imbalance. And by not seemingly being able to recognize that power and status imbalance, you kind of exacerbated. So this was never going to be a winning strategy. And how you choose to balance it off, you know, it requires the mayor to put herself at such a low status to, if you were going to pull it off, that you would have basically taken your office and minimized it to nothing. And people may say, well, it's the people's office, or we don't do status play when we're doing politics, but yeah, actually we do. This is one of the ways that politics is conducted. People look at the status and the relative status of the candidates, and that's one of the ways that they make their decisions for them. So this was...
What do you mean by status play? Just so I the listeners are clear on that.
Status play is, you know, how do we perceive the person in terms of overarching status? Do we see them as, like, there'll be some candidates who come out of the gate and they are immediately deemed to be sad sacks. They're not someone who people are going to vote for. And we know that almost intuitively right from the get-go. And that's because their status is so low that we know we're never voting for them. And they could have the best policy, the best ideas in the whole world, but if their status is low, then they are not the mayor. I think that Don Braid called it the royal jelly when he was talking about Jim Prentice. Jim Prentice has the royal jelly. Well, you know, there's something to be said for having the status that says, I can lead. I am your leader and you will follow. And Jyoti Gondek meeting with Landon Johnson indicates that she does not have the royal jelly.
Corey, talk to me about this as we close it off. What do you think, in this case it was Gondek's office, but what do you think, and this probably goes back to your West Wing reference, what do you think goes through a politician's head around what they think they can do from a goals perspective in a meeting like that? Like, you know, like, yeah. I think there's something important psychologically, as much as it's strategically, around like what politicians and others, because this is just one of several incidents like this over the years that this has happened, where politicians elevated someone as perhaps a byproduct of either a sit down or a meeting or a conversation. What do you think goes through ahead of a politician or a decision maker?
I think that most of the politicians I've worked with, consulted with, you know, advised over the years have kind of this desire to not fit neatly into boxes. They're always sort of keeping one eye open for the big throw, that, you know, they want to have the Kobayashi Maru, where they, you know, they can win in the unwinnable situation. Mm. They want to swing for the fences, to kind of pull it to like a baseball metaphor. But really, most politicians are better served by singles and doubles and just doing the things that politicians need to do well. And unfortunately, it's just really alluring to just wind up and swing as hard as you can and try to break the mold, because politicians do know that's the stuff we remember when it goes really well. But unfortunately for them, most of the time, it doesn't go really well. And ultimately, if you want to kind of play, take a money ball approach to politics rather than this kind of old school, big slugger approach that seems to be still stuck in their minds.
Carter, you know, the mayor in this particular case tried to make the case that, you know, at the end of the day, her and Landon Johnson are on the same page here, that like they're both concerned about these additional parties, these third parties that are trying to co-opt this movement with their illegal signs and whatnot. You know, they're both concerned that it's gotten out of hand. Did you like that? Did you feel like that was that part of it had some strategic merit?
No, I think that If Landon was so concerned about it, he would have put a stop to it. But he's not that concerned about it, so he didn't put a stop to it. You know, he willingly fell into bed with these folks, and the mayor tried to talk him into a position that said, oh, you don't like these either. But the goal of the operation, I'm not sure if she remembered, but the goal of the operation was to get 514,000 signatures so that she wouldn't be mayor anymore. And that would require about 514,000 people to participate in this project. So, you know, you're not going to be able to pick every one of those 514,000 people. Of course, there's going to be people who are quote unquote benefiting from this. And being able to take advantage of this incredibly bad legislation. And Landon Johnson is the is just the first of the 517 or 514,000 people that are trying to take advantage of this legislation and take her down.
Corey, any thoughts on this before we move on?
Well, just that, of course, people are going to jump onto these petitions. That's the way it has to work. Because otherwise, what would happen is you would just have your least competent friends start a recall petition for you if you had a position like mayor, right? But it's like a corporate motion. Once it's on the floor, it belongs to the floor. It doesn't belong to the mover or the seconder, right? And people are going to take these things and they're going to run with them. And they're going to get the signatures because this is the time and this is the opportunity. And to suggest otherwise, or to suggest that somehow Landon himself needed to have every signature come through his house is ridiculous. And people are going to piggyback onto these things. They're going to see it and say, for different reasons, I also don't support the mayor. And I also am going to get signatures. And that's just the reality of a recall. That's a reality of the mechanisms that we have available. And you can just sort of expect that to continue. The suggestion that this thing has been hijacked to me is like, is it? Like, what? Is that a thing? Do we care? Isn't that missing the point entirely? Is your argument now like, listen, Landon really didn't like me. But then a bunch of other people who really didn't like me came in and they also tried to get rid of me. And I don't think that's fair. Like, what is that? You know, what is
bullshit.
That?
We're going to move it on just, to our... go ahead.
Yeah, not You're, compelling. Not
moving on to our final segment, our over-under and our lightning round, Stephen Carter.
This will be compelling.
This is going to be super compelling. Now, I don't know if you know this, Carter. We do this for you. And this question is specifically designed for you to go first on, which is why I'm going to let Corey go first on it. Corey, are you in or are you out Doug Ford in his budget in Ontario? He's extending the gas tax holiday in Ontario. Are you in or are you out? Blaming the carbon tax, blaming the April 1st increase, is extending it for his citizens in Ontario. Or his folks, as he would probably say, in Ontario. Are you in or are you out?
I mean, I don't think it's very good public policy, but I suppose he's matching the zeitgeist. So in politically, out policy?
Yeah.
Carter, in or out?
I'm in politically, out morally.
Carter, ooh. Alberta. They're not extending any sort of holiday. We are going to allow the increase to happen here with our gas tax. The holiday is over in some ways. Are you in or are you out here in Alberta?
I am totally out because I think it's politically very stupid to rail on about the carbon tax increase and then increase your own gas tax by the exact same amount. It just feels like it's an own goal by the own goal specialists of the Danielle Smith era.
Corey, is it an own goal? Are you in or are you out on it from a political strategy assessment?
I'm in because 95% of the conversation has been about the carbon tax going up and 5% has been about the gas tax. And there are going to be tens of thousands of people who just say, holy fuck, gas got expensive today. Thanks, Trudeau. Right? And they're not even going to realize it was because the holiday ended at the provincial level.
You think the carbon tax gave them cloud cover to actually move on and kind of do this thing?
How did it not?
And do you, like Carter, see that as hypocrisy or do you see that as good strategy or both?
Yeah, those are not mutually exclusive concepts.
Right,
yeah,
right. It's a very cynical episode. I like it. Speaking of cynical, Corey, overrated or underrated? We have a few days to think about this now. We had a few days to observe it. Pierre Trudeau's vote of non-confidence against the government.
Justin Trudeau.
Justin Trudeau's vote of non-confidence engineered by the Conservatives. Sorry, those are the words I am looking for.
You're doing a good job.
Oh, me do great job, Carter. I'm killing it here. You in or you're out, Corey. You in or you're out on what Pierre Poilievre tried to do this past Thursday. It obviously failed, but he didn't seem to wear any scars from it. In or you're out from that political mechanism and political sort of strategy of his?
I think I'm out. On one hand, I could argue it did no harm and it had people talking about the gas tax for another day or two, right? But I just don't know that it's that great to just waste time and lose. I know he knew it was a kind of useless, futile effort, but I just don't think it put anybody in a box. I just don't think it had that much media commentary. It afforded a platform for the others as well to say, actually, there's kind of a consensus on carbon pricing amongst the political parties. I don't know. I mean, I just don't think it matters. Is there a way to be half in, half out, like just sort of sitting in the door jam or something?
Yeah, it's sitting in the door jam is the Stephen Carter mantra.
I was
going to
say that sounds like Jagmeet Singh, but whatever. I mean, whatever.
Carter, do you want to sit in the door jam? Because the Liberals survived the non-confidence motion this past Thursday. The Bloc and the NDP voted with them, of course. But from a perspective of what this meant by a peer strategy, were you in or you out on it?
I was in Ottawa when it happened. And I'm not saying I was in Ottawa because it was going to happen. But it failed. And I was in Ottawa. And draw your own conclusions, kids. Draw your own conclusions.
So you were working for the Conservatives.
Absolutely. So here's where we are. I just think I don't like doing something to fail. But it also did change the channel pretty solidly off of the Israel-Gaza piece that the Liberals were siding with the NDP on, and the Conservatives were kind of out on a little bit of an island. So I don't know. Where's Corey sitting? He's in the middle. I'm going to join him over there.
Right in the middle of the door,
it's cozy.
Last question here, Carter. I'm going to start with you. Will he or won't he? I'm going to ask you again, Anthony Housefather. We talked about his riding, the old Pierre Trudeau riding, solidly liberal riding. He's now was flirting last week about talking about, listen, I'm not directly talking with conservatives, and I don't know if there's a home for me. Time has gone by a bit. Are you gonna renege on your will he or won't we, or where is he going on this?
No,
will
I was one. Listen, I was 100% correct when I said for 100% certainty he was going to leave the Liberal caucus. And tonight, I am prepared to double down and continue that statement.
Continue oh, Jesus that statement. Christ, Corey, are you gonna do the obvious? Take the smart money on the other side of that bet.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, he continues to kind of muse about it, as far as I can tell. I saw some reporting as recently as this morning on this particular topic. It's so interesting. It is. We talked a bit about this on the Patreon episode. It is like historically a liberal lock. It has been a liberal MP since 1940.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And even in the, you know, the really, really bad times, like in the 2011 election there, the Liberals held on to it, and they won it still by what would be a convincing margin in many other jurisdictions. And it's kind of hard to imagine the Liberals losing it. It is also riding with a very large Jewish population, of course, Mount Royal.
Yeah.
And I've seen statistics anywhere from 20% to 30%, depending on the source. And you start to wonder, is that a community that will vote in a Bloc against, you know, the Liberals if there's a sense that the Liberals have abandoned Israel? I'm not convinced of that at all. But certainly if the Jewish community voted en masse against the Liberals, it would make it an interesting race. I'm just not convinced that that's an inevitability, as they say.
It's late. Yeah. You're really pronouncing your words well.
We're going to leave it there. That's a wrap on episode 1295 of The Strategist. My name is Zane Velji. With me, as always, Corey Hogan, Stephen Carter, and we'll see you next time.